1987, after serving in the U.S. Army as director of the 72nd Army Band, and from 1964 to 67 as dean of the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. At UCLA, Professor Cole teaches courses in music history, theory, and is active in the community as a pianist and organist. His musicological research and publication activities focus principally on the Viennese musical tradition from 1750 to 1950 and the emigre community in Southern California. Articles dealing with these interests have appeared in journals in America, England, Austria, and Hungary. Articles dealing with Zeisel, the topic of tonight's lecture, have appeared in Kurzmusikology and in the Österreichische Musikzeitschrift. A new Zeisel entry, I think the first entry, will appear in the sixth edition of Gros Dictionary of Music and Musicians. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce Professor Cole and his musicians. I gather we'll hear from them. Result of the encouragement and assistance of numerous individuals and organizations. Heartfelt thanks are in order to the composer's widow, Mrs. Gertrude Zeisel, who has generously placed her husband's complete legacy at my disposal. Under the auspices of the UCLA Oral History Program, an interview project is in preparation to be placed in the program archives. Thanks to the energy and the organizational skills of Stephen Fry, music librarian, I take great pleasure in announcing the establishment of the Eric Zeisel Archive in the UCLA Music Library. Barbara Barkley has undertaken the Herculean task of organizing the composer's materials. In a series of definitive performances under their director, Don Weiss, the UCLA chorus and madrigal singers have brought Zeisel's music to life. Finally, several student artists are contributing their talents to tonight's program. Kathleen Hood, cello, Rose Johansson, soprano, and Marilee Mortarotti, violin. We invite you at the conclusion of the presentation to look at the display of Zeisel memorabilia in the music library, just inside the main door, and then the composer's widow invites you to a little tea and cakes, which will be most welcome on this rather cold and typically Viennese night, as we talk about Viennese composer. If I may be permitted a personal note, we hear constantly of the inseparability of teaching and research. My involvement with the life and works of Eric Zeisel is a case in point. Through teaching, I learned of this remarkable man. For my Music 2A class, the composer's nephew, Walter, prepared a project about Eric's work. My subsequent research has led to the most exciting discoveries of my scholarly career. Whether or not it was planned, I cannot say. Suffice it to note that this UCLA bicentennial celebration of lectures displays an impressive breadth of coverage and a nice balance between the general and the specific. Earlier lectures have ranged from the Native American Francis Hopkinson, a composer and the signer of the Declaration of Independence, to the evolution of American music. Tonight, the focus shifts back to a specific figure, the emigre composer Eric Zeisel, born 1905, died in 1959. Forced to leave his native Austria, Zeisel found refuge in America. In turn, he enriched America's music. America's music, in the words of Gilbert Chase, is the music made or continuously used by the people of the United States. People who have come from many parts of the earth to build a new civilization and to create a new society in a new world, guided by ideals of human dignity, freedom, and justice. Zeisel's life and works provide a case history of the transplanted composer, that is, an artist uprooted from his native soil by events beyond his control and set down in a new environment. The word transplant appears continually in documents relating to Eric. For example, Hans Eisler writes in 1939 or 1940 that it should be possible to transplant the Zeisel family to Hollywood. In 1955, the Austrian writer and critic Hilde Spiel, who to this day remains one of Eric's staunchest supporters, wrote, "To transplant this through and through Viennese, this born musician to California soil, might appear to be an impossible task." More important, the word appears as title of a series of letters solicited by Albert Goldberg and published as The Transplanted Composer, Los Angeles Times, May 1950. Zeisel's response to Goldberg's invitation is the composer's most extended public writing. For many reasons, The Immigrant Zeisel is an especially appropriate subject for this series on music in America. Eric lived in his adopted homeland for exactly half of his creative life. He spent most of these American years in Los Angeles, thus he is a local composer too. He became an American citizen in 1945. In America, he produced roughly half of his output and the majority of his most extended compositions. In the Los Angeles Times statement, Eric reports that his immigration had a very deep effect on his work. This Viennese composer found himself suddenly in a country which he had known hitherto only through its ragtime, jazz, and spirituals. Here, he composed a series of major pieces that differ significantly from his Viennese production, both in musical technique and in choice of subject matter. These profound changes cannot be ascribed solely to Zeisel's displacement. Involved also is the composer's interaction with his new environment. The result is a fascinating process of evolution from European music composed in America towards an international musical idiom in which specifically American elements are incorporated. In a broader context, Zeisel the individual stands for a group, the emigre artists who settled in America and enriched its culture enormously. In histories of 20th century music, their contribution is scarcely reported, let alone evaluated. For any sustained coverage, one must resort to sources outside the field of music, for example, Laura Fermi's Illustrious Immigrants, The Intellectual Migration from Europe, 1930 to 1941. Happily, emigre artists are increasingly the study of scholarly investigation, particularly in Southern California. I dedicate tonight's offering to this community, a vital piece in the mosaic that is America's music. Although he dwells in undeserved obscurity at the present time, Eric Zeisel was a successful and recognized composer during his life. Viennese audiences applauded his early works. Viennese critics praised them. Paul Pisk, for example, wrote the following in Radio Wien, January 31st, 1934. Among Viennese composers under 30, Eric Zeisel is one of the strongest personalities. This response was duplicated in America, the composer finding an ally in Albert Goldberg. Throughout his life, and upon the occasion of his premature death at the age of 53, several of the world's foremost composers, conductors, and performers paid eloquent tribute to the man and his music. The standard music reference works tell the curious reader little or nothing of Eric Zeisel. Here follows a capsule view of the young composer. Born May 18, 1905, into a family which owned a coffee house, Eric was thoroughly Viennese in temperament and heritage. Early in life, he realized that he wanted to become a composer. To appreciate music and to perform it were encouraged by his family. To become a professional composer, on the other hand, was unthinkable. Surely he would star, the worst fate imaginable to a coffee house family. Acting in what she considered the boy's best interests, Eric's mother locked the piano and burned his early compositions. His grandmother shook her head, muttering that Eric lived in delusion. Finally, the family relented to some degree. At the age of 14, Eric's formal musical training began, financed by Eric himself. For a time, he attended the Vienna State Academy of Music, studying with Richard Stör, Hugo Kauder, and Josef Marx. Eric responded negatively to traditional musical disciplines presented in classroom situations. Recognizing this, Stör instructed the boy privately. Zeisel's professional career was launched officially in 1922 at the age of 16 with the publication of three songs by Edition Strachan. Enough of conventional biography. What of Eric's appearance, his personality, his playing? The answers lie in a vivid word portrait painted in Hilde Spiel's first novel, Katie on the Bridge, 1933. Here is the young man at age 25. The musician was sitting at the piano. The eyes were blue, gray, and clear like deep water with brown pebbles at the bottom, changeable and sad. The head was powerful. The hair grew wide, extending from the forehead. The mouth sat wild and broad, as did the brows. Two violent lines traversing the face. In spite of it, he looked childlike. as if for the time only the forehead was marked with the burden of his vocation, while the soul remained still undiscouraged. His body was short, broad, and somewhat plump. At his sides appeared the hands. There they hung like two big passive animals, short and strong, with broad, round fingertips. The ensuing dialogue presents a picture of a man who blurts out remarks without thinking, a man who sometimes forgot important appointments, a man whose moods swing with amazing rapidity from merriment to melancholy, to brooding depression concerning his career and his talents, to despair because he thinks his compositions are worthless. Here is a man thoroughly dedicated to his art. I compose with my heart. Not a speck of brain in me, not an inch of self-discipline, not a trace of superiority. Music holds me in her hand and shakes me and tortures me, and I cannot force her. Don't laugh, a very smart person has told me that. I can never explain it so well. Here is a man who communicates eloquently through his playing. He turned on the piano stool and awkwardly, like an elementary pupil, spoke the words of a night song, mechanically and learned by heart, as if he had not understood a word of it. Then he began, and played so softly that she hardly heard him at first. His face was lifted upward. It seemed suddenly lighted from within. The brow, somewhat arched, had a rapturous swing. His mouth was half open. On the keys danced the two big animals, lively and with ease, so softly on cushioned paws. The melody, softly rising and falling, swelling and ebbing, so soothed and dissolved that one wanted to lean back and close one's eyes in order to prevent the tears from welling up. Almost inaudibly, he sang the words. His voice sounded gentle and suppressed, like very soft, muted trumpets. In the room, it seemed to grow darker, but it was still day, only the snow clouds hung deep. From the music emerged the night, and caused the light to dim. Here, finally, is a warm, vital man with an incredible zest for life, a man with a marvelous sense of humor. Knowing that Katie is recovering from a serious illness, he barks, "Then be still and run to your supper. A lot of dumplings and cabbage so that you will look better. Pay attention, I will quickly compose it for you." And he struck powerfully into the keys. Now the dumplings rolled into the room in big tureens. Now the cabbage was slurped with delight. Spoons and forks clanked on the plates. Just as an hour before, the summer night had extinguished all the colors in the room. Clearly, Eric emerges as a Viennese figure, one who suffered from that strange malady known as the Austrian sickness. He could not tolerate being more than a few miles from Vienna. His was a lyric, dramatic talent, which expressed itself most naturally in song, and which yearned to project itself on the larger canvas of opera. Like Beethoven, he was always on the lookout for the right libretto. He inherited the great Austro-German tradition of Schubert, Wagner, Bruckner, Wolff, Mahler, and Richard Strauss. He assimilated their achievements and blended them with his own techniques to forge a unique personal style that lies somewhere between Romanticism and the Viennese avant-garde. His Viennese music is graphically descriptive. Images gleaned from poems, novels, the Bible, and works of art find concrete expression in music that is by turn majestic, pastoral, grotesque, pathétique, or comical. The style characteristics of Zeisel's Viennese music may be summarized as follows. His melody is lyrical in the Austro-German song tradition. It often contains treacherous leaps that trap the unwary singer. His rhythms function often as ostinatos. His choice of rhythmic figures and tempo serve to heighten dramatic expression. He preserves the major and minor system of tonality. He uses pedal point, step motion in the bass, and sequence to provide a simple and solid foundation upon which he can build a rich chromatic superstructure. His compositions tend to grow rhythmically, melodically, and harmonically from a small nucleus, a germ, if you will. Rhythmic patterns unify within pieces, cyclic themes unify between movements. Formally, his compositions are cast most often in a simple song form. To his larger compositions, he either transfers song form or adopts Baroque procedures. The forms, such as Sonata Allegro of mature Viennese classicism, are not customarily employed. Here, as an example of Zeisel's Viennese production, is the song Vergiss mein nicht, Forget Me Not, the poem by Richard Schaukel, the dedication to Mrs. Zeisel, and Rose Johansson is going to sing it.